right, everybody, welcome back. We've got another awesome guest joining us here at the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your host, Bryce. As always, joined by my buddy, my compadre, Mr. Brendan Veepman. Brendan, how are you doing today?
Hey, Bryce, I am doing great. At the time of recording this, we are just days before the halving. So it's only fitting that we talk a little bit more about Bitcoin and everything that's happening in the ever-expansive Bitcoin ecosystem. So man, I am hyped up for today's episode.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Bitcoin has kind of taken a little bit of a backseat to some of the meme coin craziness, the altcoin, the DeFi stuff really popped up here in Q1. But as you mentioned, the halving is this once every 4 years event that constricts the supply of future Bitcoin. It's something that really drives a lot of the price action in crypto, and people are really excited about it. And so we wanted to dive deeper into not just Bitcoin, but what's being built on top of Bitcoin. There's an explosion of new innovation, new technology. It's kind of the Web 3.0 version that starts to meet Bitcoin, because now Bitcoin it's got a stable base layer, but now it's starting to get programmability that's easy. I'm not going to say that, but more advanced, more flexible. So anyhow, we wanted to bring an expert on Bitcoin, on programming on it. Professor David Say from Stanford University, who is building Babylon. David, how are you doing today?
Very good. Bryce and Brennan, so nice to be here today.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. We keep things casual here. I mean, this is Crypto 101. So I know you're a professor at Stanford. You might teach 501 or 601 level courses. We keep things easy. And so the easiest question I will ask you is to tell us a little bit about your background before we dive into Bitcoin and everything you guys are building on Babylon. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came into this industry.
Yeah, so 5 years ago, a friend of mine introduced me to this paper called the Nakamoto's Bitcoin White Paper. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was doing research in a totally different area. And actually, my research contributes to us everybody's daily life, the cell phone. So I was doing research on how to make cell phones communicate reliably and efficiently so that everyone in the world can have a cell phone. So that was my research for many years. And I've made contributions to the protocols. In fact, everybody is using my protocol whenever you use a cell phone. Now,
what's it called?
It's called the proportional fare protocol. So every time you use a cell phone, you're getting data from the base station. And the base station has to figure out how to distribute the data to many, many cell phones at the same time. And I have a protocol which helps them to do it efficiently.
That's epic. Wow.
Yeah, that was my past life. But then when there are 5 billion or 6 billion cell phones out there, then, you know, from a researcher point of view, it's time to move on. It's time to move on to something which is starting from zero or near zero. And that's when I met Nakamoto's white paper, and I fell in love with it. It's such a beautiful white paper, written only in 9 pages, but yet contains so many brilliant ideas. And I got hooked onto it as a researcher. As a researcher, you see all the brilliant ideas in those 9 pages, but you also see all the potential new innovations that you can build on top of those ideas. And that's how I got excited. And I started a new research direction at Stanford. I built a completely new research group with new graduate students and new researchers focusing on essentially how to build secure and scalable protocol beyond Bitcoin. That was our focus in the past few years. And I just want to be brief, but one of the contributions we made was on Ethereum's proof of stake protocol. So during the merge, we find some attack vectors on the protocol. And so we report to Vitalik and his team, and we started a very fruitful 1 year long collaboration to make the proof of stake, Ethereum proof of stake protocol more secure before the merge. So that was one concrete contribution we made to the industry.
That's incredible. And would you, in, is it fair to say that your work at Babylon grew out of that? I know you guys are working on proof of stake for Bitcoin. It was kind of all that research going on hand in hand, or were you kind of looking at this as a research project, experimental for fun? And then, you know, when you guys kind of hit that, you know, big moment, you're like, hey, let's spin this into an entirely new project or company or whatever.
Yeah. So in our research journey, we started with Bitcoin. We started with Bitcoin. That was our first love. That was our first love. Mm-hmm. But then
everybody's Bitcoin, first love, right?
Yeah. But then Bitcoin kind of fell out of vogue to some extent, mm-hmm. because it's been sort of all the action, excitement is on the new proof of stake protocols, Ethereum, for example, Avalanche, Solana, etc., all proof of stake protocol. And so what we came up with, the idea we came up with is actually, well, you know, Bitcoin is kind of fell out of vogue, but actually Bitcoin has a very strong property, two very strong properties. One, it's so secure, it's supported by all these miners working on the Bitcoin. And two, it's the largest asset by far, crypto. You know, Ethereum always talk about, what do you call it, well, we're talking a halving in a few weeks, but Ethereum always have this, what do you call it, surpassing Bitcoin in value. What was that term?
The flippening,
that's right, the halving, the flippening. The flippening, well, it has not occurred yet. In fact, it seems to be further and further away from flipping. Now Bitcoin is about 3x Ethereum. So what we're saying is, okay, all this security, all this asset, right now, or at least when we started this research 2 years ago, it's like sitting idle. Nothing to do, completely isolated from the rest of the Web3. Web3 is marching on, but Bitcoin is like left behind. But yet, it's still a very large asset. It's still very secure. And so our project, Babylon, is really the idea of trying to combine the best of both worlds, all the innovations with proof of stake, but yet still leverage off all the security and huge asset of Bitcoin to make Web3 even better, even more secure. And so that's the thesis of the project.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, you're building protocols for cell phones, which was arguably one of the most impactful technologies of all time. And now 5 to 6 billion people are using them. So my question is, do you think that crypto can also reach 5 to 6 billion users? And if so, like how long would that take roughly?
Yeah. So in some sense, my experience in research in cell phones gives me the inspiration and the long-term faith in crypto as well. So when I started doing started doing cell phone research, I'm revealing my age, but who cares? It's about year 2000. Okay. In those days, it was called 3G. Now we have 5G and moving on to 6G. But at that time, it was 3G. Okay. Starting 3G. And at that time, there was no iPhone. There was no iPhone. And so this whole idea of our research, which is to scale cell phones to make it reachable to many, many people to carry a lot of data. In fact, we were kind of a bit blind because, you know, there were the applications, the real scalable applications have not appeared yet. But yet we're already thinking about scaling cell phones. Okay. And at that time, it was just basically a sort of a belief that, hey, you know what? If we build it, someone will come. And indeed, after about 7 years of our effort, the iPhone came and that was history. So that's the belief in crypto as well. We're in the early days of crypto. A relatively small fraction of the population uses crypto on a daily basis. And what we're doing is to prepare for that future, for that iPhone moment for crypto. When we started doing research in 2000, you know, we could not really envision why people would use all this data that we were capacity that we're providing them. Only when iPhone shows up, then we sort of understand, so that's it. Mm. That's what we're working for. And I cannot tell you when the iPhone of crypto will show up, but I have faith that it will show up because I've seen one before.
Hmm. And so it's fascinating just that, you know, you've been pioneering in technologies that really do have network effects. And these are the fastest growing technologies. And we see one of the big value propositions of Bitcoin is that It's got a network, right? And over time, as that network grows, the price of that asset also grows. And so you've decided, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, not to build the next iPhone of crypto. You're building kind of supporting technology so that the next iPhone kind of can be built on crypto, if you will.
Yeah, so I'm a basic infrastructure guy. So my experience and my strength is in building infrastructure. And so I'll let someone else build the iPhone, but I'll build the infrastructure that supports the iPhone, right?
And what is that infrastructure?
So the infrastructure that we're building in Babylon, okay, is basically this. If you think about what distinguishes Web3 from Web2, is decentralization. You want to decentralize the power away from central authority. But the most important thing about decentralization is security. Because once you decentralize, then the power is distributed. And you don't want people to take that power and attack the system. So security is, in my mind, the central innovation of Web3. And what we are doing is, in some sense, we are making that security very scalable by allowing Bitcoin, the 1.4 trillion asset, to provide a security. So let me just unpack this a little bit. Okay. So the future is proof of stake, right? So all the new blockchains are proof of stake. But how does proof of stake chains secure themselves? They secure themselves through capital. So that distinguishes between proof of work and proof of stake. Proof of stake is secured by capital. Well, where does that capital come from? In the past few years, all the proof of stake chains, the capital comes from the native asset of that chain. So typically when you build a new chain, you would spin up a native asset, Solana or ETH or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you use that native asset to secure itself. Okay. However, when can take a step back is that, well, actually all we need is a crypto asset to secure the chain. Does that crypto asset needs to be a native asset, which is highly volatile? Or can it be another asset, which is much larger? And so we came up with this idea of using Bitcoin, which is the largest asset, as a staking asset that can be used to secure all these chains. So that's essentially the protocol that we're building. We call it the Bitcoin staking protocol. We love the name because Bitcoin and staking doesn't seem to go together at all, but our protocol combines the two together.
Wow, I love it. It sounds incredible. And I remember back in the day, there were things, altcoins that would use merge mining, and so they would mine, you know, on Bitcoin, and that would secure the network. But it sounds like this is a little bit different. It sounds like you could kind of stake your Bitcoin, which is a very new concept. You could stake your Bitcoin and you could earn a yield for that. Even though Bitcoin's not proof of stake, it's proof of work. So by staking that Bitcoin, you're not actually participating in any consensus, you know, for Bitcoin. Is that right? For instance, you can't buy up, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin, stake it, and then have some say in how the network operates. Is that right?
Yes. So let me unpack this a little bit more. You talk about a lot of concepts here. First, let's start with merge mining. So Yes, that's right. So merge mining is actually a concept invented by Nakamoto himself, Satoshi Nakamoto himself. It is a way for it to share security of Bitcoin with another proof of work chain. So in those days, everyone just thinks about proof of work chain in 2010, 2011. Now, however, nowadays, most new chains are proof of stake chain. So merge mining is not applicable because merge mining is to share security with another proof of work chain. So therefore, we came up with this concept of Bitcoin staking, which you can think of as merge staking, which is to take the asset, instead of taking the work, the energy behind the asset, we take the asset itself, and we use that asset to share security with proof of stake chains. So that's the one core concept. Now, second is that Bitcoin is proof of work. Okay. And our project fully respect Bitcoin as it is. We are not thinking of changing Bitcoin protocol itself in any way. So therefore, we are not suggesting that the Bitcoin should be used to provide voting power to the Bitcoin chain itself. The voting power is entirely reserved for the miners who are working very hard to protect the chain. What we're saying, though, is that this asset, this huge asset, 1.3, 1.4 trillion asset, can be used as a staking asset remotely for proof of stake chains, which is not Bitcoin, for other chains, in other words. So that is the core concept. So in other words, any
and it does this by you know, if I understand correctly, it does this trustlessly. So I'm not lending you my tokens to a centralized sort of entity who takes that dollar value and then goes and buys tokens on a different chain to stake them. It's all done through smart contracts. Is that right? Because if it wasn't done, then it would kind of have a lot of custodial risk.
Correct. Nobody should lend. Nobody should give Bitcoin to me. I'm just a mad professor. And if you give Bitcoin to me, I'll lose them. I'll lose all the keys. So don't give it to me. Don't give any Bitcoin to me, please. Thank you very much. I'm just a researcher. We're just building a protocol. Now, exactly. The protocol is trustless. It is self-custodial. So any Bitcoin holder can lock it in a contract on the Bitcoin chain. On the Bitcoin chain. And this is a staking contract. And the protocol is such that this asset can become a staking asset that can secure another chain through the contractual agreement. Exactly. Now, I do want to clarify one point you made, which is smart contract. Okay? Smart contract. Now, the unfortunate thing about Bitcoin, or fortunate thing, it depends on your point of view, is that it has no smart contract. In fact, one reason why people believe that Bitcoin has never been attacked before is because there are no smart contracts. So the attack vectors is much reduced. However, because of the lack of smart contract, it's also very hard to build stuff on Bitcoin. The beautiful thing about our protocol is that actually we do not need the smart contract capability. We can build contracts even with the existing Bitcoin so-called scripting language, which has very limited expressibility. In fact, I was just writing this paper before meeting you, and our paper title is Remote Staking with Dumb Contracts. So in fact, we are very proud to be dumb.
I like that. Yeah, less complexity, less attack surface. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've seen in my, you know, eight odd years in crypto is that all these smart contracts on Ethereum or Solana, sometimes they just kind of go belly up, and for reasons that can't even be explained. I mean, somebody could just be auditing a GitHub repo and accidentally pull the plug on one. I remember, you know, back, you know, when this happened to Ethereum, and some random dev just accidentally killed a contract that had, you know, hundreds of millions of real world dollars locked up. In Parity, there was a hack, and, you know, all sorts of different things along the way. And so what I'm hearing from you is that you guys are using, you know, the notoriously robust and strong, resilient, you know, kind of language that Bitcoin is coded in. But somehow there is some kind of contracting capability there, but it's not as complex, but it still gets the job done. I guess, could you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah. So Ethereum smart contract has this fancy name called Turing Complete. Sounds fancy, doesn't it? Who doesn't want to be complete, right? Who wants to be incomplete? But what Turing Complete really means is that you can essentially write any computer program, okay, on Ethereum, any computer program. So that's very powerful. That's a very powerful concept. But the fact that you can write any program also means you can write buggy programs. You can write buggy programs. And the more complicated the program you can write, the more chance you are introducing bugs. And that's sort of account for many the reasons why so many attacks are on smart contracts. It's a smart contract layer attack. Okay. So in Bitcoin, however, Bitcoin is focused on actually not as a platform to write arbitrary applications. It is only focused on one application, which is payments. So the Bitcoin language essentially only allows you to describe, okay, how a coin can be paid, the so-called spending conditions of the coin. So you just tell you, hey, this coin can be paid if someone signs it with this particular signature, okay? Now, fortunately for us, though, it does have a few additional features, very small number. But one very important one is the so-called time lock, okay? So you can lock your Bitcoin, still self-custodial, but you can lock your Bitcoin for, say, 3 months, okay? And you can take that Bitcoin. No one else can take your Bitcoin. But after 3 months, the Bitcoin is automatically usable again, okay? So this contract is a very simple contract, but it's still self-custodial. You are still sending that Bitcoin to your own address. It's just that you can't have access to this coin for 3 months, okay? And this
was kind of in the original Bitcoin code since it started. This feature has always been a piece of that. Is that right?
Okay. So I do not believe so. I think it's introduced in about 2014 or 15, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But maybe let me double check on that, and I'll get back to you offline after this so that I have a correct record of this statement. It's very important to make correct statement about Bitcoin. Because the reason why it's a little bit complicated is because there are two or three different time locks. And I know that one was introduced in 2015, but I wasn't sure whether all of them were introduced in 2015. But in any case, right now, in the existing Bitcoin script, there is this time lock. Okay. So this, as you can see, this is a contract already, right? And you can see that if you want to do staking, a time lock is kind of important because, you know, by staking, you mean you're locking your fund for a certain period of time. If you have no capability and you can always take out your fund, then this is not a security, okay? This is not providing security. So the time lock is a basic primitive that we use to build this. And luckily for us, Bitcoin actually has it.
Yeah, you know, one of the cool things that I saw here recently is that you launched your BTC Signet, and this brought in over 100,000 users. And what we're seeing is that people are constantly being more interested in using Bitcoin for other purposes. You know, we started off with traditional Bitcoin layer twos, and then we looked at ordinals and BRC20. Now there is, you know, almost the arrival of runes, and then there's the ETFs. Do you think that this proves that people are wanting to expand the Bitcoin ecosystem?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that we a year or two ago, we have this bit perhaps misconception that somehow Bitcoin holders are kind of a different aliens or something like that. That somehow they have some very weird likes and dislike. For example, they don't like to use the Bitcoin in any way. They just want to put it in cold storage. But actually, the reality in the past year has disproved that with ordinals and also with our protocol launching is that, hey, Bitcoin holders are just like any crypto people. There are many, many Bitcoin holders out there. And like them, they like to do interesting things like buy NFTs, like staking. Staking is such a basic functionality for all proof of stake, Ethereum, Solana. It's such a basic thing. And now we're telling people, hey, even you with your Bitcoin, you don't have to go and sell it to buy an altcoin to do staking. You can stake it directly with your Bitcoin. And after 6 months, if you don't want to unstick, you can take back your Bitcoin again. It's the same old Bitcoin that you had 6 months ago. So basically, we are disproving, I think, as part of this renaissance of Bitcoin, disproving the fact that Bitcoin holders are any strange species that are different from other token holders.
I love it. Yeah,
and staking's really been on the rise for the last couple of years, too. You kind of see staking slowly become the standard, especially over the last like decade. We start off with Bitcoin being, you know, the real set standard with proof of work, and altcoins that were created afterwards For the most part, were focused on proof of work. And now the longer that Ethereum has been around, the longer kind of that its model has been here, you know, a lot of projects are navigating towards proof of stake. And I think you're kind of highlighting the properties. And it was only a matter of time before someone like yourself came along and said, how can we start looking at these features to integrate them with Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, the thing is that staking is kind of one of the lowest risk use of your token while still having yield earning opportunity. So, you know, in traditional finance, there's this concept called risk-free investment, which is not exactly risk-free, but very low risk, like, you know, buying a government treasury, for example. Staking is like the crypto analog of that to some extent. And so what we're saying is that, hey, how come Bitcoin with this 1.3 trillion asset doesn't have this risk-free investment option, a risk-free staking option? And our protocol essentially endows Bitcoin with this option.
I love it. And, you know, it's I like the idea of being able to kind of share Bitcoin's security with other applications. As I understand, is it a fair assessment to say this kind of exports a little bit of Bitcoin's security to other applications, for instance, Akash Network, which leverages Babylon, or the Osmosis platform, Injective, and you know, maybe about a dozen others?
Yeah. So here, yeah. In fact, the exporting of Bitcoin security to other chains is kind of the starting point of our research 2 years ago, as I mentioned. So what we discover is the following, right? A token, a native token of a chain, can have many uses. For example, it can be governance. It can be for the economy on top of that blockchain. And it could be staking, okay? But we find that actually staking is kind of one of the not so good use cases of the token, because, you know, staking is all about security, right? Security is all about stability. And the native token, especially the early days of a native token, typically is very volatile. So using it as a stable base to secure your economy doesn't seem like, on hindsight, a very good idea. It was how proof of stake was started, but on hindsight, it doesn't seem like a very good idea. And what we're saying is that, hey, with Bitcoin as the most stable crypto asset, and with Bitcoin as such a large supply, why don't you use Bitcoin to provide that stable base for you to build your economy on top of? So that's the kind of the thesis of our project.
And kind of in follow up, am I, you know, if I go and stake through Babylon, am I then earning BTC as my yield, or am I earning tokens from Injective or Osmo or whichever token I'm staking, or is it a blend? How does that work?
Yeah. So now it depends a lot on what network are you securing using your Bitcoin. So as we build our protocol, then stakers will have option, okay? They can decide on which network they want to use the Bitcoin to secure. Hmm. Now, the yield you get will depend on the economy of the chain or the network that you're securing, okay? So if that network decides to pay in the native token, then you get the yield on native token. If that chain decides to pay in stable coin, then you'll get stable coin. Now, if that chain happens to be a Bitcoin layer 2, for example, all right, or a Bitcoin side chain, then potentially you could get Bitcoin as the yield as well. Because if that economy is trading on Bitcoin, then it could potentially provide Bitcoin yield. So it depends very much on what, you know, economies you're securing.
I love it. Is this, I mean, this is kind of very similar to EigenLayer in the Ethereum world. Is that correct?
Yeah. So let me clarify the differences and similarity with EigenLayer. So by the way, the EigenLayer founder, Sriram, is my 15-year-old friend. In fact, we were doing research together when we were doing cell phones and so forth. And in fact, we moved into the blockchain space together about 5 years ago.
Amazing.
When I talk about reading the Nakamoto white paper, we were reading it together. We, each of us, wrote our first
that
paper
so
together
cool.
in crypto, so I know him very well. So,
wow.
So to clarify, one thing is the following, right? Ethereum already has staking, okay? EigenLayer built on top of that to provide restaking. Now, Bitcoin does not have staking. So our main contribution of our project is to provide the staking primitive. So I think a rough analogy is like Bitcoin staking is like Ethereum staking. And of course, you can build an EigenLayer style restaking on top of our protocol Bitcoin staking. And so we are doing that as well. So in some sense, you can think of Bitcoin staking is like Ethereum staking plus EigenLayer restaking on the Ethereum side, except with an asset three times the size.
You know, there's a lot of talk with the halving right around the corner, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, but it seems like the community is split. There's a lot of people who are like, the four-year market cycle that is paired with the halving is still intact. And then there's people that are saying we're starting to divert. You know, the market's maturing and other stuff is happening. Like, what are your thoughts on the matter? Because I think in the past, everyone's looked at the halving as this, you know, massive, impactful event. And it, you know, typically is followed by this historic bull market. And the markets always move through this relatively stable four-year market cycle with parabolic upside and volatile downside. But do you think that that four-year market cycle is still like intact and paired to the halving?
Yeah, so I have to say, you're asking the wrong guy. You're asking the wrong guy. You know why you're asking the wrong guy? Because I am at the heart a researcher, okay? So yeah. I believe in kind of long-term progress of technology. So when we started the Babylon project, it was the near the end of the previous bull cycle. Okay. And then everything kind of went down. There was FTX and there was Terra. There were all kinds of things happening around us. It's like news every day. But we just keep on building because we believe in this long-term vision of Bitcoin. And in fact, when we built Star Babylon, people were laughing at us. Why are you building on Bitcoin? That's like a stupid, sounds like a stupid idea. You should go with your friend Shuram. You should go and build on EigenLayer. Ethereum. But we never mind. We just believed in Bitcoin. We know that Bitcoin has a very strong intrinsic properties. And now Bitcoin has sort of revived. So in my mind, I just built the technology. Doesn't matter. It's bull cycle, bull market. Yeah. A bear market, just keep on building. So I cannot predict what happens after the halving. But anyway, so that's my answer.
No, and I think that's a good answer. And it's probably one that a lot of people need to hear because it's so easy to get caught up in every little action that happens and every little piece of news, every $10 that Bitcoin moves, right? It's so easy to get caught up in the short term and with what's happening. And then you lose sight of the long term. And the one thing that is proven, you know, up until like literally this month, Bitcoin has just continued to appreciate and its user base has grown and its adoption has grown. And just the whole ecosystem of cryptocurrency that is being led by Bitcoin continues to expand. And so, you know, sometimes a lot of people need to hear that exact thing of like, hey, look at the big picture. You know, prices are going to go up. They're going to go down. There's going to be this halving. There's going to be another halving. Heck, there's going to be a lot more halvings after this. But kind of looking at that long-term picture and the infrastructure that's getting built behind the scenes is kind of the key things to watch out for when we look at like long-term appreciation.
But I do want to mention this halving a little bit, right? So what is halving, right? Halving is the reduction of reward, okay, to the miners. So halving has a long-term threat to the security of the Bitcoin chain. You may have heard this notion of the security budget of Bitcoin reducing through the halving. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, that's why it's so important to build on Bitcoin, because you want to get more value to the Bitcoin so that the miners will not only need to get value from the reward, they can get value from the transaction fees, they can get value from the increase in the price of Bitcoin. And that's why it's really important for projects like us, and not only us, and Ore nodes and layer twos and other things, to build on Bitcoin to give it additional value to keep the party going.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, for the price of basically
basically for miners to keep mining and have those incentives line up, the price of Bitcoin needs to keep going up. Or else they're just going to shut their miners off because there's no incentive to mine. So you get half the rewards, but over time, you know, hopefully half the rewards denominated in Bitcoin is actually the same or more than half the rewards just denominated in dollars. So you know, we're pretty excited about what the Bitcoin halving is going to be able to do. But like you said, I'm just as excited or even more excited about the builders and the developers like yourself, who are building applications and really building infrastructure that aren't possible to exist today, but you're building the infrastructure for them tomorrow. And so I guess my question to you is, you know, what sort of applications, what sort of front-end applications are going to be made possible by leveraging Babylon that, you know, would be unable to be built before Babylon existed?
Mm. Yeah, so as I mentioned a little earlier, our technology is so basic that it's completely application agnostic, actually, right? Mm. So anytime you want to build a new application in Web3, if it's a true application, then it should be an application which is decentralized. And essentially, our technology allows you to do that using the cheapest cost in terms of security. So if you think about sort of how to build applications, every application you build, you have to pay some security cost, either directly by building your own L1, or you are on an app or already on an existing chain which already have a security cost and you pay fees to that. So any new applications, you have to pay security cost. And if you think about it, what we are providing is that, hey, you can build any application, but at the lowest security cost. Why? Because Bitcoin is the largest, most abundant asset. And therefore, that will keep the cost of security the lowest because the supply is highest. It's just basic economics 101. Since this podcast is crypto 101, so I bring some economics 101. Economics 101 says what? Says that if the supply of a good is large, then the cost is lower. That's where it is. So Bitcoin is a much larger supply than any other crypto asset.
Fair enough. Well, hey, you know, one of the things that I noticed here recently is I saw that Babylon just wrapped up its phase one. And this is pretty exciting because you gathered over 430,000 people on your wait list, which is, you know, man, that's a feat in and of itself. So, you know, first of all, congratulations on that. But it kind of begs the question, what's in store for phase two?
Oh, yeah. So let me clarify a little bit. So we have launched our testnet, and even before the testnet, there were 400,000 people on the waitlist trying to find more information about the project. Wow. In the testnet, as you mentioned, we have 100,000 stakers that has appeared within the 48 hours of the launch of the testnet. So it's very exciting. The next step right now is we'll launch the mainnet. Okay. So the mainnet will be launched in two phases. So in the first phase, we will provide Bitcoin stakers to come and stake the Bitcoin. Okay. We'll start small with a small cap to make sure everything is secure and so forth and gradually increase the cap. So this is a little bit like the EigenLayer launch last year. Second phase, we will bring, proof of stake chains that will use this Bitcoin staking. So we already have a bunch of chains we're working with right now in the DevNet. And we'll, as they mature, we'll bring some of those onto the mainnet. And then the economy cycle closes where the stakers can now get yield from these chains. So that's phase two.
Incredible. That's fantastic. Certainly can't wait to see that. And you know, be really exciting to see about all the different partnerships that you guys spin out, and that you could, you know, use your Bitcoin. Listeners at home could go, you know, and we'll make sure the links are in the chat, or the links are in the show notes for everybody to go find where you can stake your Bitcoin. I am curious though, while we have you, just a couple more questions. You know, I'm just curious about how the Bitcoin ETF, which was launched earlier this year, how that's affected your work, your life. Maybe even the perception of your peers, other professors, who, you know, when you're talking, hey, I'm researching on Bitcoin and this is going to be the big part of the future. I mean, some of your peers, maybe even before the Bitcoin halving, I would imagine maybe this is not a legit technology that's going to be here to stay. And then after the ETF, did like that change the perception of other Stanford and, you know, elite college level perceptions of professors?
Yeah. So ETF is really a sign of crypto going mainstream. So I think it does lend a layer of legitimacy to the to Bitcoin in general, to a crypto asset in general. But as I said, you know, I believe in what I believe. What other people believe or not believe is not really my issue. But however, one thing good about Bitcoin ETF is it does attract a lot of more attention to Bitcoin itself. And so it does give more momentum to this whole effort of building on Bitcoin. As I mentioned to you, when we started this project 2 years ago, really hardly anyone is building on Bitcoin. And people thought we were kind of weird to build on this archaic technology from, you know, it's actually from a decade ago. It's not that far, a long time ago. But people think, you know, in crypto time, things move very fast. So Bitcoin seems to be very archaic. But I think the Bitcoin ETF certainly brings a lot of attention and price action onto Bitcoin. So I think that certainly helps our project. Overall, it helps the entire momentum to build on Bitcoin. So we ran an event we call Bitcoin Renaissance in East Denver about 2 months ago, and a few thousand people showed up. It's kind of an oxymoron because it was a Bitcoin event as part of a side event to East Denver, which is an Ethereum event. But yet a lot of people showed up. So there you have it.
Yeah, I love it. I've got one more question. I think Brendan might have one or two more before we let you go. But I'm just curious, as you know, one of your big moments, your aha moments, was originally reading that Satoshi Nakamoto paper. You yourself have authored research papers. I'm curious what you think about Satoshi's move to remain anonymous. You know, as a professor yourself, you know, what do you think his motives were? Do you admire this move? How do you kind of think about his anonymity in regards to this really groundbreaking technology?
Yeah, as a researcher, I really admire this move, and I'll tell you why. Okay, so humans are driven by a few very basic things: fame, fortune, and what do you call it? Money. Okay, and this guy doesn't care, right? His Bitcoin is frozen on his chain, never touched. And for a researcher, why do you want to do research? Well, to be frank, you want to be famous. You want everyone to know you. You want to why do people want to win the Nobel Prize? Because so that everyone knows about them. If you ask the researcher and say, do you care about winning the Nobel Prize? And they say no, that's probably lying to you. Okay. So I really admire.
It's not about changing the world. It's about getting known.
It is about changing the world and getting the Nobel Prize. They will tell you if they're honest. And so I know a lot of these people. I am in the academia for
That's
a long
why, yeah.
time. I know how big ego academics have, researchers have. And so I really admire Nakamoto. It's really groundbreaking research. He doesn't care about claiming the fame. That's amazing.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Even after all these years, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that would have started Bitcoin in his or their shoes and started anonymous and set it into motion. But I feel like a small fraction of those people would have remained anonymous up until this point today, because now you have an asset that's worth over $1 trillion in a multi-multi-trillion-dollar ecosystem. And you can't say that it's a little bit tempting, no matter who you are, to be the creator of this thing that is literally like turning the world upside down, the financial world upside down. Like, you have the opportunity to be one of the richest people in the world now. And yet you're right. Like, he or they or whoever they are, they don't care about it. The Bitcoin in the initial wallet is untouched. And Satoshi has not come out and said, listen, I am Satoshi Nakamoto. I've created Bitcoin. Here's proof. I'm the move funds around of the original wallet. Like, none of that's happened. So it's just crazy. It takes a special kind of person or group to do something like that.
Yeah. And I think it was probably like the Satoshi Nakamoto character. There's got to be some group, right? And there was probably some kind of multi-signature wallet that was set up to make sure that, you know, no one person who could have their ego take over, become a villain, and then hack the network. It's got to be, you know, some kind of consortium. But
no, I don't agree. It has to It has to be one single individual, because if it's a group, one of the person will be tempted to at least reveal and get their worth of ego boosting. So it probably just one very strong-minded, very strong-willed individual. That's my two cents on this issue.
Wow. I wonder if Satoshi's going to take it to the grave. Like, how crazy would it be if, like, right before he died,
an unmarked gravestone in classic Satoshi style, just some unmarked gravestone somewhere in a cemetery. But yeah, crazy. I think he will. He or she. But look, hey, David, outside of Babylon, outside of maybe anything that you're working on, I just want to know, you know, what's one company that you've got on your radar that you think is just an outstanding crypto company that you really admire, maybe their founders, or admire the work that they're doing in the space? What's somebody that you think that everybody at home listening right now should maybe go check out and keep on their radar?
So, you know, one thing about, I don't think I'll highlight one company or one project, because I have a lot of friends in this crypto space, and so I don't want to do that. However, I would like to highlight one thing, right? Is that there are multiple projects which I really admire in the crypto space, which are really driven from a long-term research vision. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of rare outside in the Web 2, Web 1 space, because typically the researchers have a very peripheral role in forming big companies. Whereas here in crypto, you can think of projects like Arbitrum or like Eigenlayer that you mentioned, or like Babylon. They are really driven by researchers. Arbitrum, for example, right, was founded by a professor in Princeton, Ed Felton, and his two graduate students, two PhD students. So it's really started from a very long-term research vision driving this project. Arbitrum, the technology is really interesting. It started this whole wave of optimistic protocol, optimistic layer two, and the Eigenlayer as well, very research driven. And I can name also many other projects like Starkware, also driven by very fundamental long-term research by Professor Elliot Bensassen. So a lot of these projects, not one, not two, not three, but many of them are really driven, and a lot of ZK zero knowledge projects, some of them driven by my students at Stanford, in fact. I was teaching them one moment, and the next time I know, they were raising funds at $55 million from Paradigm. So it's kind of like pretty crazy. And they're just taking research like, you know, no one knew that it could be practical a few years ago. And then they make it work. It's just amazing energy to drive this whole industry forward.
Absolutely. We love to see it. We love to hear it. This has been an incredible conversation. And David, we got to leave it there. But we want to know, where can people find out more? Where can people follow you on social, or you have a newsletter? You know, how do people kind of stay in touch and learn more about
Babylon? Yeah, so I think you can go to our website, babylonchain.io. That website, you have a lot of information. You can also go to our Twitter, Babylon_chain. That's our Twitter handle. And there are a lot of information there.
Perfect. Well, hey, thank you so much for spending the hour here with us today on the Crypto 101 podcast. And to everyone at home listening, thank you for joining us. And come back same time, same place next week, and we'll have another amazing guest with you. So thank you guys for joining, and we'll talk to you soon.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.